This is the web stream of KBOO Portland. KBOO is 100% community supported. If you have not yet become a member, go to the website kboo.fm and click on the tip jar.
The U.S. has to lead, and to lead, we have to have a concrete program here to reduce our pollution. This plan allows the president to do that.
And President Obama's a defense of fracking?
Well, he didn't really get into fracking in the speech. He did call for new measures to reduce methane emissions, which is an important aspect of this. Methane is a powerful climate-changing agent, and it leaks out of oil and gas systems. We absolutely need better regulation to control that, and we shouldn't be expanding fracking until we have strong regulations in place.
Tyson Slocum, the issue of the Keystone XL pipeline.
Well, it's great that the that Obama mentioned the fact that that tar sands features significantly more greenhouse gas emissions risk than conventional oil. And he said that he would not approve the Keystone pipeline if it resulted in a net increase in emissions. The problem is that his own State Department has already said that it will not result in a net increase in emissions. So, again, at first glance, his words sounded great. But the deeds of his agencies and his administration says another thing.
At this point, John Boehner's people immediately said, the House Speaker, since he said only if this doesn't increase net gas emissions, they said, well, since we know it doesn't, I guess they're moving ahead.
Right, but any
right.
fair
and
assessment.
So what this means is that the massive grassroots mobilization that has made Keystone, rightfully so, a key issue to oppose— needs to mobilize again, and we have to have a redo of that environmental impact statement that the State Department conducted. And actually, the State Department didn't conduct it. It was a dues-paying member of the American Petroleum Institute that conducted that analysis that falsely concluded that Keystone will not result in net emissions. So again, it's up to the activists out there to keep Obama at his word.
Dan Lashoff, five seconds.
Well, Tyson's right. The State Department plan assessment was wrong. EPA actually weighed in and said it was inadequate, which is an important indication that the revised plan will change. And even Wall Street is clear that the Keystone pipeline is critical to expanding tar sands. So we think this will lead to a rejection of Keystone.
We want to thank you both for being with us. Tyson Slocum of Public Citizen and Dan Lashoff of the Natural Resources Defense Council. That does it for our broadcast, Marks Now, produced by Mike Burke, Renee Feltz, Aaron Mate, Steve Martinez, Sam Alkoff, Hani Masood, Rabbi Karen, Dina Guzder, Amy Littlefield. I'm Amy Goodman with Nermeen Sheikh. Thanks so much for joining us.
You are listening to KBOO Portland, where the time is now 8:02. Coming up next is Wednesday Morning Talk Radio with host Lisa Loving. Today's guests are Will Levinson, Willamette River event organizer and Maine ringleader, and Marisa Frieder, who is the founder of the Portland Bridge Swim. We're going to talk about reclaiming the Willamette River for recreational uses.
Are you a veteran with hearing loss? Saturday, June 29th, Hearing Loss Solutions for Veterans will take place from 8:45 to 5:30 at the Oregon Convention Center in Portland. It features workshops, panel discussions, and the newest technology. Lunch will be provided. Don't miss Hearing Loss Solutions for Veterans at 8:45 a.m. Saturday, June 29th at the Oregon Convention Center. Pre-register today at hamiltoncaptel.com/veterans.
This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Gazelle Natural Fiber Clothing and Full Circle Resale. Full Circle accepts like-new natural fiber clothing, jewelry, and accessories for consignment or store credit. Gazelle and Full Circle Resale are both located at the corner of Northeast 41st and Fremont, and on the web at GazelleNaturalFiberClothing.com or FullCircleResalePortland.com.
This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from the Clinton Street Theater, featuring independent and revival films, the Rocky Horror Picture Show every Saturday at midnight, as well as the monthly KBOO Movie Night. The Clinton Street Theater is located at the corner of Southeast Clinton and 26th in Portland. Schedule and information at 503-238-5588 or cstpdx.com.
It's 8:06 a.m. and you're listening to KBOO Portland. This is Wednesday Talk Radio, part of KBOO's live progressive talk radio slate every weekday. I'm your host, Lisa Loving. This just in, the Supreme Court today struck down a key part of the Federal Defense of Marriage Act, ruling that legally married same-sex couples are entitled to the same rights as all other married couples. Congratulations, everybody! Yay! Sorry, I screamed in the microphone. The decision voids the section of the 1996 law that denied tax breaks and other federal benefits to more than 100,000 gay couples who have married legally. Same-sex marriage is now legal in 12 states. Let's do it, Oregon. In a second decision, the Supreme Court has ruled that supporters of California's Proposition 8, a California voter initiative that defines marriage as a union between a man and a woman, have no standing to appeal the earlier judgment, striking down Prop 8. This will leave in place the lower court ruling striking down Prop 8. California will go back to recognizing same-sex marriage. Other states will not be affected. Join me here at 9 when I'm going to be back with Peter Zuckerman, Oregon Marriage Organization spokesperson. We're going to be talking about these, pulling these apart. And then the second half of that hour, we're going to have someone from the ACLU on the phone looking at the Voter Rights Act. So later this morning on Supreme Court decisions. But today, Wednesday Talk Radio, Big Float 3. This summer, we have two chances to jump into the Willamette River with a few thousand of our new best friends forever with the World Float. It's Friday, July 5th, and Big Float 3 on July 28th. Our guests this morning are event organizer Will Levinson and inspirational swimmer and community organizer Marissa Frieder. Thank you for being here, you guys.
Thanks.
Oh, and we have Michelle Macy, inspirational swimmer, on the phone. Michelle, thanks for being with us.
Yes, of course. Thank you.
So first, let's go to Will, and Will, talk about Big Float 3 and talk about the World Float. Is this the third time I've had you on the air talking about jumping into the river? The first time I didn't even have the courage to jump in the river.
Yeah, no, I really appreciate the support that you've had for this idea, Lisa, for sure. You were here from the beginning. The hardest thing was just to get it going when it was just an idea on a napkin and just kind of the idea of getting a bunch of people to the Willamette the first time. So I appreciate you helping us kind of start this specific conversation around swimming in the Willamette. So now we have the Big Float 3 coming up. This is our first year. Last year we had 1,400 people participate. This year we're shooting for 2,000 people. We have rented the Blues Festival Bowl, Tom McCall Bowl. People know it as where the Blues Festival is held. We're going to have three bands on a barge, so you'll be able to take in a concert via inner tube. Then we're going to have an after party with food carts, Kona beer, Barefoot wine. The Oregon Massage Therapist Association will have 30 chair massages, giving free chair massages after all the heavy stroking we do in the water. And we're going to have.
It's not that stressful on the bod, people.
It's not. It was actually just a fun excuse
to
have
massages.
That's
delirious joy there. Yeah, anyway, keep going.
Question was, how could we make the Big Float more awesome than last year. That is the goal, is to really just throw a great party for Portland on the water to help people rethink the relationship with the Willamette.
Mm-hmm.
Last year, we had an event called Unrock the Bowl, where we simply picked up riprap rock and put it back on the bank. And we're hoping to have a beach party at that takeout this year. So it's going to be a super good time.
It's a do-it-yourself revolution.
Yes. These things need to start somewhere, and there's been a lot of work done, starting with Tom McCall, just kind of really starting this conversation going. So, you know, this is hopefully getting people into the water is, he would be so pleased, I think, to see that we've been able to take the conversation this far.
Dude, how cool would it be to get a Tom McCall impersonator down there? And he'd have like 1970s swim trunks and stuff.
Hey, if there's a Tom McCall impersonator
out
there,
call in. We are at 503-231-8187. We have Michelle Macy on the phone. And Michelle, you were the person who most recently, I think, jumped into the river and did an incredible event just very recently. Michelle Macy, talk a little bit about the Willamette River and the swim that you just recently did.
Well, I partnered with Will and the Human Access Project to do a 12-hour swim in the Willamette to get people talking about it, and it did exactly that. It was on June 7th, so it was a wonderful success, and it was a beautiful day out, and it was great for me because just to have all the supporters and people coming down and kids taking little field trips to the river to say hello, so it was a great event.
Actually, I have to call out to the Oregonian newspaper. They did a really charming story where they interviewed a young woman who was standing on the bank just watching you go back and forth. And she was talking about what a shero you are to her. Michelle, talk a little bit about the river itself. So this is not the first time. This is not the first time you've jumped into the Willamette and swum around. What's it like in there? And do you feel like you're being poisoned? And how many heads do you have? Do you still have two eyes? Stuff like that.
Well, I have a wonderful friend in Marisa who is very connected to understanding the health of the Willamette River. And actually, I've been swimming in it for most of the season. So I've been in it since January. And it's just lovely to be in, actually. It's a great way to experience the city. It's a great way to connect with the nature. I have two eyes. One head. I unfortunately haven't grown another arm or leg to help me with my swimming, so all that's normal.
That would be fun.
And
if you did.
I actually don't feel like I'm being poisoned. I mean, in swimming, it's not like you're going down to drink the water. You're just in it and playing and experiencing all that it has to offer.
Right. And I have to say, when I went in last year, it didn't stink. I didn't see any garbage. It was warm. It was wonderful. I mean, the water was wonderful. I was surprised. Of course, I was only floating on top. Now, Michelle, I know that in this article that I read in the newspaper, you were talking about how actually in the article, they talked about the different varied water temperatures. Can you just talk about a little bit of your observations of being in the water? What is it like?
Well, it's its own living organism, really, and it's got unique characteristics throughout. The currents definitely add some unique characteristics. There's cold water, there's warm water, and you experience it all at the same time. The Willamette's unique in the fact that it's also a tidal river, so you have to take that into consideration. Mm-hmm.
Okay. I'm just going to ask you one more thing. How does the Willamette compare to other, what I think of as wild water? That's just what I think of as wild water. It's not a swimming pool. How does the Willamette compare to other places you've swum?
It's really different in the fact that you get to swim right through a downtown area. And you don't get to experience that in a lot of other wild water. And you don't get to have the camaraderie of the people on the shore. Usually when I'm out swimming a channel, it's me and the boat and the people on the boat. And that's, you know, it's the unique experience that Portland has with the Willamette running right through the center of the city.
Mm. All right. Thanks a lot. And I don't have any other questions. It looks like we actually have a caller. So we don't have a caller. It's just some wonderful
It's a stuck phone line, and that's awesome. People, we are talking about jumping into the Willamette River July 5th for the World Float. Has anybody else gone swimming in the Willamette in the past year or two? We'd love to hear your jumping in the Willamette story, because there's a whole movement now of people to try to reclaim the Willamette, capitalize on all the money that we invested in cleaning up the big pipe, all these other things. So we'd love to hear from you. 503-231-8187. Have you jumped in the Willamette lately? And so Marissa Frieder, Portland Bridge Swim. What is the Portland Bridge Swim, and why did you start it?
The Portland Bridge Swim is a not quite 11-mile swimming race from the Selwood Bridge to the St. John's Bridge. We're going into our third year, and it started just with an idea I had about sort of sightseeing in the city. I thought it would be fun to swim under all the bridges. And so I trained and did it as a solo swim with Michelle Macy teaching me everything I know. I'm sure she knows more about marathon swimming and distance and cold water. So I've got a background in microbiology, and I researched it really carefully before I was willing to put my body into it. And when I got in, it was a joy. The water is clear. I was in that river about 9 hours every weekend all summer. I didn't get sick. I checked the bacterial counts. I looked at chemical contamination, and I was quite confident when I got in that I was going to be safe. During that training period, I spoke with other distance swimmers who do this more as their sort of bread and butter. For me, it was an adventure. For them, it was every day, and they were really interested in doing it, so I sort of had to promise to do it as a race the following year. So in 2011, we had 16 swimmers, and they all came out of it marveling at the beauty of the city, at the cleanliness of the river, and we created ambassadors for the river who are now invested in what happens, and they listen more carefully to news reports. They demand answers and solutions because they know that's their river. In 2012, we had 36 entries, of which 9 were relays, so that was 54 bodies that got into the river, and they all came out having the same experience. So every year we build the number of people that can speak to the health of the river and demand that it continue to be cleaned up. We currently have 38 entries. The race this year is on July 21st, and based on past registration rates, I think we're going to have close to 70 or 80 people swimming in the river this year, and it's going to be beautiful.
It is incredible out there. And I know that we've got a bunch of callers, or we've had some people call in, but I want to say the Portland Bridge Swim, you're talking about people coming from all over the country to do
yes,
that?
Yes. We have people last year, Arizona, Colorado, Washington State. We've got people coming from Atlanta this year, as well as the usual California, Washington. I haven't looked recently, but yeah, this is a destination event for people who do this type of thing. And I know it's hard to believe that there are that many people who do, but marathon swimming is an exponentially growing sport. And Portland's a great city. Everybody wants to come here.
It's true. And it also makes me wonder, again, the comparing and contrasting different rivers, because mm-hmm. do we fight over the Willamette? Did we just have a knockdown drag out about sticking fluoride in the water system? And the Sierra Club and other environmental groups came out and they didn't support it because of what it might mean for the Willamette. Mm-hmm. This is not me throwing down an argument about fluoride, but I'm just saying that people, it cracks me up, because some of the people who were so freaked out that I was suggesting that we jump in the river were the people that were really mad at the thought that there could be fluoride in there, even mm-hmm. though they were saying, no, it's too dirty to jump in. But then they were arguing, no, don't get fluoride in there. So it's like, people, get off the fence.
It's time for us.
See that fence? Get off it. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
It's time for us to understand that it's our river and we need to take it back.
Yeah,
the best way is to get right in it.
I want to throw this down to all the fluoride people that didn't want to see fluoride in the water. Jump in the river. Do it. You know, put your money where your vote is on that. I'm just saying. I'm sorry. Yeah, actually, it doesn't cost that much money. You throw down for the World Float, you throw down $20, you get the water inner tube and the
life jacket. Right.
And the life jacket. You have to have a life jacket to do it, people. You can't go in without that.
Correct. So what we did was we wanted to, during the big float last year, I underestimated what it would take to get at least 555 people approximately to hold hands in the water. Turns out it's a little bit harder than I thought, but there was enough people, not even necessarily the current. I just thought that if you didn't have a hand in your hand, you could just grab a hand and it would form a chain, but it's a lot harder coordinating that many people as
the,
I thought.
The people were there. The question was, how could you prove everyone was holding hands at the same time? It was the logistics of it.
Lisa was a witness
this year.
I'm telling
you, I was there.
So what we're going to be doing this year is we wanted to just really put our head around the logistics of it, just line it up, break it out, and break a world record. Enough people expressed interest and enthusiasm with trying to break the world record that we're looking to set it July 5th. We're charging $20 for two reasons. One, to make sure that people are a little vetted to showing up, because we just don't want to be able to open it up and have people not show. And then we want to make sure that everybody has the proper equipment. So for $20, you receive a inner tube and a life jacket, which are both are required. And the retail value of that is $29. So it's actually a good deal. You get to participate and you walk away with a really good deal, because we're selling it at very close to cost. And
then you can use all that gear when you come back July 28th for the big float three.
That's right. And right now we're just about 100 people away from the number we need to break the world record. And over that, we can have as many as 700 people. But I know that this last week, these spots are going to go super quick. So if you want to be a part in breaking a world record on the Willamette, kicking off the summer in style, go to the big float. Actually, go to humanaccessproject.com, and there is a link for the world float on the humanaccessproject.com website.
Human Access Project is really, really interesting in its own right, and we do have a caller. Let's go to the phone lines. We have Joanne on the phone. Joanne, what do you think?
Well, I have a short question. Is it, I want to use the word healthy. Is it better to jump into the river than into a chlorine pool? And I have a side for you, Lisa.
Okay.
I heard about water birthing, but never had the privilege to do it. And I was just wondering if you did, Lisa. And also, one more question. Are decrepit old bodies that don't know how to swim welcome to your events? And I will hang up.
As usual, she's putting the big things on the table. Joanne, I did not have a water birth, but every time I got into the bathtub when I was going through labor, I swear, all the pain came away. And then I didn't want to get out of the bathtub, and they made me get out. Okay, that's just my birth story. And it all worked out. My cat was there. It was a real quick birth. The chlorine pool question. This comes up every time.
Mm-hmm. Marisa, yeah.
Sure. So you're definitely dealing with different issues, and I don't want to get too gross, but pool water has been in a lot of places you'd probably not want to think about when you're in the water. And when you're talking about a covered pool, you've also got air quality issues, which are actually a pretty big concern if you're
chlorine gas is real.
Right. And you don't have that in open water. So I actually haven't thought about which one is better or worse, because they've both got their risks. But you can certainly make an argument that swimming in a pool has its own inherent dangers.
Funkiness, yeah.
Yeah, funkiness is a good word for it. It's not something you want to think a whole lot about.
And then quickly, I want to go to Will Levinson. What level of physical achievement do you need to be able to jump in the river and float across? Okay, I'm not an athlete and I did it, but if I don't know if you can't swim, you that's why you have the life jacket and the swimmy ring. Go ahead.
That's right. I mean, we want to encourage people to get into the water, but number one, if you have any fear of water, I would say please don't do it. Mm-hmm. If you have a fear of water, for one. So you should feel comfortable swimming in the water. The float is going to be shorter this year because we're not crossing the channel. We're going to stay on the west side. We're going to put it under the Markham Bridge, go to the Blues Festival Bowl. But, it does require some physical activity. I can say that we had people of all ages last year, from kids to people in their 80s. So maybe this is just an opportunity for you to get in the pool and do a little tune-up and try to get comfortable. But ultimately, the interesting thing is that when you sit in an inner tube, it takes, believe it or not, as lazy as it looks, it does take some abdominal muscles to keep yourself upright. So, you know, what I would say is this is your time to get into training. Buy an inner tube, sit in that inner tube, practice your ab crunches, you know, a little bit to tune up for the big float, maybe jump in the pool, do some laps. We would love to have you out there. You have a little over a month to prepare. And really, too, I would say just psychologically prepare yourself for an awesome party. Oh, we have our sights on you, Blues Festival.
It was so awesome. And I also, when I want to say that when I was in my happy little floaty ring, visualize a duck, right? The duck with the feet under the water, but also you need to use your hands a little bit. So it's not at all like swimming laps or anything like that. It's just that you don't want to have some kind of crazy panic attack in the water. And I know that, you know what? I'm afraid of wild water. If I can't see the bottom of it, it freaks me out. Mm. It does. I love the ocean. I want to go right by it, but I don't want to go in it. Okay. That's upsetting to me. But when I got into the water, okay, the side of the river last year, and I've got this big old plastic thing on me because it's the floaty device plus the green, my green water tube. When you're walking into the water, you see your feet. You can see everything, right? And so it wasn't so bad for me because I could see the water as I was getting in. I mean, you're never going to see the bottom of a river if you can. It's a
Well, this is interesting, river. Too. I don't know if you had this experience, but when I first did the big float, of course, I had to do a trial run. And I knew that the Willamette was safer swimming scientifically from just the vetting from all the different public resources. Mm-hmm. But still, when I got in, there's that second where I was thinking, okay, I'm getting in.
What's going to happen?
And I got in the inner tube and I started paddling out. And as soon as I got in the water and started paddling, I knew the big float was going to be a huge success because it just feels great. And
it smells good. There's no trash. You don't see weird stuff in there.
But the thing for me, and I don't know if you felt this too, in terms of Portland's very uncomfortable relationship with the Willamette, because we pride ourselves on being green. There's the whole fluoride thing where people wanted to protect the Willamette, but yet on the other hand, make jokes about the water quality of the Willamette. We're hyper recyclers. What does it really mean to be green anyways? And I think our uncomfortable relationship with the Willamette is hard for people to get their head around. So for a lot of people, I think when they actually put themselves in the Willamette, it is such a relief to know, wow, this river is actually not as bad as I thought it was.
It kind of ends this sort of
uncomfortable, unanswered, unreconcilable thing that allows you to say, hey, I pride myself on being green, but on the other hand, I'm not doing anything about the Willamette. Because ultimately, one of the things that really fired me up was I hate when people make water quality jokes about the Willamette. Like, I'm Jewish. Jewish people, I guess, bring on the calls, whatever. People will make G jokes to me here and there, and I should maybe just be more zealous and say, hey, I'm a Jew. But I don't feel like it's coming from a place of hate, so generally I can just say, okay, these people are just ignorant. When people make jokes about the Willamette, it seriously pisses me off because I can see that it just holds back all the progress that we want to have. And first of all, it's completely ignorant. Second of all, it holds back this movement because if you are a green person, you should not be making jokes about the water quality of the Willamette. You should be pissed off and wanting to do something about it. Now, there is a lot of work that needs to be done on the Willamette, but the best starting point is just simply to get into the water. Right now, you can make a huge difference in our community simply by getting in the water and swimming.
I also want to come out and say, if you care about the Willamette, I'm a big fan of the Willamette Riverkeeper, and they do a lot of stuff too. And so find out more about them at willamette-riverkeeper.org. They have been a past supporter of this project. That is a place, if you care, to plug in and do concrete things over there at the Willamette Riverkeeper. We also, a couple weeks ago, had the Columbia Riverkeeper on these airwaves. Love that guy too. A lot of things have happened on the Columbia Riverkeeper story. By the way, 2 weeks ago, we had Mr. Sears, the Columbia Riverkeeper. Now, since then, there's been this story, and he was quoted in it, about oil shipments down the Columbia. So these things matter. Columbia Riverkeeper, Willamette Riverkeeper, plug into those organizations. And we could use a few more callers, people. I want to hear from someone who has jumped into the river in the past year, okay? Let me know. We're not even just talking about jumping in the river. What we're talking about is having fun in the river. I'm not saying get on a bridge and jump in the river. That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying that there's a couple places, and we'll talk about that a little bit more, where people have actually, in a volunteer basis, made little beaches on the Willamette just so that we can go in there. And we'll talk a little bit about the legality of swimming in the river and maybe places you might want to avoid. But people, I also want to throw this down. Did you vote against fluoride in the water? Did you? I want to hear about your plans to jump in the Willamette then, okay? I'm putting that down. I'm challenging all y'all, okay? If you voted against a fluoride, you better do something concrete around the Willamette and the Columbia too. And the number to call, reach us here, 503-231-8255. 8187. Hey, I want to go to Michelle Macy. We still have her on the line. Michelle, where did you swim along the Willamette, and where would you suggest are places people might be able to swim or get in?
Oh, I defer to my expert Maurice on these. So I have swum just last weekend. I swam from Clackamas Park down to St. John's Cathedral Park. So I've swum a lot of the Willamette, but
and
I think Maurice
that's Milwaukee to St. John's.
Yeah. Anyway, keep going. We're stunned because we can hardly drive that length. No, go ahead, Michelle. Keep talking about the places that you've enjoyed the most swimming in the Willamette.
You know, Cathedral Park has a great little two little boat ramp areas, and in between them is kind of a sandy beach that's blocked off from boaters being able to get in. So it's a what I would say a relatively safe place to wade in and start to experience it. Plus, you're just underneath the cathedral bridge, which is so lovely in the architecture, and to see it from underneath is amazing. Marisa, and Will, can you recommend a few other places?
Thanks, Michelle. I'm fond of Selwood Riverfront Park as well. I love Cathedral Park, but one of the caveats there is that I'm told there's debris a bit out from the beach area, so you have to be careful.
On the bottom, on the river bottom?
Yeah, in that enclosed area. I haven't run into it when I've gone out there, and that's where we bring swimmers in at the end of the race, but you have to be careful depending on where the water level is.
Like if there's a shopping cart or a car or something?
I'm not sure what it is down there. It might be wood, but yeah, when I've been there, the water level has been high enough that you wouldn't be able to put your feet down anyway.
It's always sandy. A good idea, I think, for when as a recreational wader, at least. Like, there's different degrees of how you can act in the water, from really active uses of swimming to just passive wading.
Right.
Particularly if you're a passive wader, it's a really good idea to always wear water shoes.
Yeah.
Any river you're in, it's always a good idea to wear water shoes. But for me, the places that I like, and I'm kind of a hobby person trying to find these new places to swim in the Willamette, Selwood is mm-hmm. probably the best place to swim in the
right.
Willamette. I would say the downside, the thing that makes me less passionate about Selwood, is I really like the idea of creating opportunities to swim in downtown Portland where the bulk of the population is.
Absolutely.
Selwood's really nice. Cathedral Park's really nice. But I feel like both of those serve those neighborhoods more than they do all of Portland.
Hawthorne Bowl, just for the, I mean, being in the middle of the city and being in the water and looking up at that is really what inspired me to do everything I've done in the river.
Wow. Okay, we are live in Studio 2 with Will Levinson and Marissa Frieder. She's the founder of the Portland Bridge Swim. Will is the founder of Big Float, and we're looking at the Big Float 3 coming up at the end of July. We're also looking at World Float Friday, July 5th, really promoting that. We have inspirational swimmer Michelle Macy on the phone. But Michelle, I think we're going to let you go because we're missing a phone line today, and we're trying to get more people to call in. And we're going to just thank you, Michelle.
Thanks, Michelle.
We're just going to have you on our radar. And people, I just really want to, I think it's exciting that people who are inspirational swimmers, I mean, it's like
Michelle is a rock star athlete in
yeah,
our community.
Is.
Yeah, that is awesome. So, but anyway, listeners, we have a half an hour left to talk about the Willamette River, and we haven't had very many people calling in. You didn't vote for fluoride and then be down on the Willamette. I'm sure that's not true. Really looking for people to call and share stories about swimming in the Willamette. And I'm guessing it's possible that, no, it's a rainy day. People are probably in bed.
Yeah.
And it's summer. But
I'm sure people are listening and they're just kind of kicking back, having their coffee in
it's
bed.
True.
But maybe can we talk about the
503
a little bit more?
503-231-8187. Talk about your Willamette River. Talk about what you're willing to do for your Willamette. I'd love to hear your Willamette story. Talk about the World Float.
World Float. I mean, it's going to be very interesting. First, I'm expecting we're going to get to 700. If we get to 700 people, that's going to be a 3/4 mile long chain in the Willamette. In order to, one of the logistical things we had to get done was get the fire department comfortable, because we're putting in at the OMSI dock, and a 3/4 mile long chain would actually go past the Hawthorne Bridge from the OMSI dock. So they have asked us to do a zigzag line. So what we're going to do is we're going to take our chain and we're going to go straight towards the Morrison Bridge, the center of it. We're going to follow that line back to the shore. We're going to loop back around, go back to the middle, and then we're going to head towards the beaches underneath the Hawthorne Bridge. So even if you are not able to come and you aren't interested, I can't imagine not wanting to be a part of a world record.
Really, it's kind of a great big party.
Currently, the world record is held by a town, Viraggio, Italy. In 2008, they got to 543 people. And the funny thing is, when I heard that last year, I was thinking, oh, we're just going to crush that during the big float. It is a lot harder than I thought. So, believe it or not, it's a real... I mean, if you ever want to take, for me, stock of my life to just say how lucky I am as a person, to be able to have the time to devote 6 months to doing the logistical planning for how you set a world record attempt, it's pretty cool.
The devil's in the details, actually. Again, I mean, there was the people were there. It was all about proving. You had to prove that the people were connected in a certain way. But listeners, I mean, I have to say this. Just being in the water, doing something you've been told not to do for so many years, and doing it with a couple thousand people is a gas. I'm putting that out. Now, if everyone told you to jump off a bridge, would you? Well, maybe not. But going into that river, I can't. I'm looking at you and saying, I've never had that much fun ever in my life.
That's awesome. Thank you, Lisa.
It was incredible. Awesome. And we do have a caller. Let's go. We've got Harry on the phone. Harry, what's going on with you?
Oh, I'm just a question for you. Will you have lifeguards on duty, or do you have a spotter boats when you take swims for such long distances?
Thanks for calling. Good question.
So
that's sort of two parts.
Yeah.
At the big float and the big float events, there's tons of volunteers, and everyone's got flotation devices, but I think
correct.
That you do have
safety.
A whole phalanx of safety people there.
That's true. Safety is the number one concern with the big float. So in order to even do the big float, we need to get sign off, and we have coordinated operations plan with the Coast Guard, Multnomah County River Patrol, Fire Department. We have, for this year, we're going to have two Coast Guard safety boats, Multnomah County River Patrol boat, 50 safety kayakers. Everybody who's participating is going to be wearing a life jacket. It's going to have a flotation device of some sort. So
I think we got you covered.
We really try to over-engineer the safety for the big float.
Right.
And world float, everyone is going to be required to wear a life jacket as well.
Mm-hmm. But this thing about...
The long swims.
Yeah.
Yeah. So when you're doing it, as a single swimmer, not part of the Portland Bridge Swim, I absolutely recommend doing it with an escort kayaker who has a life jacket for you and is keeping an eye on you. And that's for a lot of reasons. One is in case you have any trouble. You know, you get a cramp you shouldn't be doing this unless you know what you're doing anyway. Don't go out and do it tomorrow if you're not training for it. But the other part of it is for visibility, for recreational boaters, it's really important when you're swimming in the river that people know you're out there. You should be like Las Vegas, just lit up and visible. For the Portland Bridge Swim, every swimmer has an escort kayaker. The kayak has a flag so that boaters can see them. And then we have support boats, power boats, every half mile along the course with spotters. And we monitor them very carefully.
I already mentioned that the Oregonian had a really charming story about Michelle Macy's recent swim. And part of that story, the reporter interviewed talked about the special relationship she has with her kayak person, who's like a 79-year-old, also
yes.
marathon swimmer. And it was amazing. And listeners, look, I know how many kayakers there are in this town. Dude, mm-hmm. that means you're part of this picture, right? What surprised me about the big float last year was that I saw different kinds of boating type things that I didn't even know existed before, right? Yeah. There were people on what looked like surfboards, but they were standing up. Stand-up paddle boards. And so they had like a big stick so they could hold on to it. And I was like, what is that? It's like, it never occurred to me to go down to the river edge and just get involved. I mean, talk a little bit about that. There is a gigantic Willamette River community of people already.
And I think with something like the Big Float, I'm going to speak for Will. I think with something like the Big Float, one of the really beautiful things is you gather all these people together who might have been interacting with the river individually, and you bring them together, and there's that great sense of sort of shared purpose, but you also get to see that fantastic diversity that you might not have noticed otherwise. Mm-hmm. It's just, there are so many great ways to enjoy the river.
Right.
Well, one of the interesting things that I think a lot of people haven't considered is the Willamette River is Portland's largest public open space, mm-hmm. completely underutilized. I mean, you start getting a sense when you can get 1,400 people in the river like we did last year, and it puts a little bit of a dent on the Willamette, but there's so much space out there. I mean, when I look at the Willamette right now, all I can see is a blank slate that's limited by our creativity. But the first thing we have to do ultimately is start getting people in the water. I mean, academically, Portland, I think a lot of times is when it comes to planning, different things. We're really good at talking and dreaming, but little short on doing a lot of times. I mean, it seems like there's a lot of agreement that, well, for one, it's just a fact that there's an absolute deficit of water edge access opportunities in downtown Portland, particularly when you can compare it to other Northwest cities, Seattle, Vancouver, Victoria, Boise's inland. It's a smaller city, but compared to those larger three cities, I mean, there's virtually ultimately, what really led me to start the Human Access Project was, okay, so the water's clean. Where do you get into it? I mean, that there's a real deficit of opportunities to get into the Willamette right now.
Okay. And it's 8:39. This is Wednesday Talk Radio, KBOO's live progressive talk radio every weekday morning. We are live in the studio with Will Levinson and Marissa Frieder. We already were speaking on the phone with inspirational swimmer Michelle Macy. We're talking about the World Float. It's coming up Friday, July 5th, and then Big Float 3 on July 28th. Find out more about those at Big Float. I feel as though it's bigfloat.org.
TheBigFloat.com.
TheBigFloat.com. But humanaccessproject.com is super interesting. I really encourage you to go there because there's a wider vision of what the river means and why we should be interacting with it this way. Now, we've talked about the water is clean, but there are some places where it's not so clean, and it's not clean. I'm just going to say it's not clean everywhere. So can you guys talk about that a little bit? Can you talk about that? There are places, River Mile 11, which I understand is at the bank under the Fremont Bridge, is considered to be a mysterious hotspot for, I want to say, PCB contamination. Probably, yeah. Talk about that a little bit.
So based on what I have read, and this was what I looked at before I was willing to put my own body into it, based on what I've read, the risk comes from consumption. The contamination is stuck to particles, so it's pretty much in the sediment. And your danger comes not from being in its presence in the water, but rather from drinking the water, or more importantly, eating fish that have been consuming those particles. And so to me, the question was, how much of that sediment am I going to be exposed to? And the answer is, you know, I'm a good swimmer. I stay off the bottom. I'm not drinking the water. So your risk is actually minimal when you're passing through that area. And those things are not... The problem comes from long-term exposure and larger doses. Mm-hmm. So it's not great. I want it cleaned up, mm-hmm. but the EPA considers it safe for recreational use. We pass through that area, and the chemicals at that point are diluted enough, and you're not drinking enough water for that to become an issue.
And I guess I'd add that the PCBs aren't penetrable through your skin.
Yeah, that's PC, what I was trying
PCBs,
to say.
My understanding too, were developed by Monsanto. It's was kind of another miracle insulator back in the day. But what happens is that resident fish, it's a bioaccumulate. PCBs are carcinogenic. So fish will eat PCBs. It'll accumulate in their bodies. And so if you eat a resident fish, it's like eating a little concentrated PCB nugget.
Yum.
Yeah. So for...
Monsanto's my favorite flavor.
Yeah.
Right. So for, you know, in terms of humans, my understanding is you would have to eat like... You would literally have to eat just a lot of sand. Like you would actually have to eat sand, a lot of it, to have any, because the PCBs bind to sediment and they're not penetrable to your skin. So, I mean, it is a big issue, and the Superfund stuff is coming up, and
it's
river,
important.
It is important.
That's
river,
part of
river
the point of this event is to plug people into cleaning up the river and to make
correct.
It a better place.
I mean, the Riverkeeper organizations do a really good job with advocating for those types of things. For me, I mean, in terms of the Big Float, the World Float, what I'm hoping to do is take people from a place of being indifferent about the Willamette, not caring about the Willamette, or maybe even making jokes about the Willamette, getting them into the Willamette for the first time, helping them understand that this is a completely underutilized asset to our city that has the potential to add a whole new leg of livability to our town. And then once you get into the water, if you don't care about the Willamette River, and ultimately... I feel like people in Portland don't love the Willamette. I mean, I've lived in communities that love the river. People do not love the Willamette. People out in this community listening, if you've lived in a town with a body of water close by, that in the summertime people would go and swim in, and it was the lifeblood of the city, you understand what I'm talking about. That is what's going to happen to Portland the next 3 to 5 years, because people in Portland aren't stupid. And every time somebody gets into the water, as Marisa said, that they become river ambassadors, and the acceptance is going to be exponential.
And they're going to care a lot more about cleaning up those PCB sections and the Superfund site, because they're going to say, okay, Will got me into the river downtown. That was spectacular. Where else can I get in? Well, I can't get in there, and that makes me mad.
Correct.
That's what's going to happen.
So I'm hoping that our role in this whole advocacy process is creating a pipeline of interest, so that rather than people being disconnected from the Willamette, if you aren't connected to a cause, the advocacy is just a white noise in the background. If you're connected to a cause, all of a sudden it becomes sexy and interesting and you're invested in it. So I'm hoping that our role in this process will be kind of introducing people to the Willamette for the first time. We're going to be looking to do our own capital projects on the Willamette, where we're going to be able to put in new beaches, trails, docks, signage.
Because the city's totally supporting what you're doing. I mean, the city, let me put it a different way. They're not necessarily throwing money down on it, but they're not blocking you either.
They appreciate it, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I think we've got a pretty good relationship with the city. And I would say from a prudent standpoint, it doesn't even necessarily make sense to spend a lot of money on improving the river at this point, because there hasn't really been proof that people will use it. I mean, at this point, what I'm looking to do is improve the lowest hanging fruit areas where people can get into the water. And we'll know when the movement gets to the next level, when people are waking up at 8 a.m. on a Saturday because they want one of those few spots on the Willamette and it's crowded and there's no place to sit. That's going to happen. And then when that happens, we're going to be able to go to the city and say, hey, we need more.
All right.
It is naturally going to take care of itself.
I want to say, the most recent story that I'm finding, and I'm going to OregonLive.com because I feel a sense of solidarity with my media colleagues that lost their jobs last week due to the Newhouse Corporation consolidation. They're going to get rid of Oregonian News Company and start up something called OMG, whatever. Anyway, settlement moves Portland Harbor's River Mile 11 closer to cleanup. This is an article by Scott Learn.
Yeah.
Scott, we love you, man. Yeah. Scott also lost his job, one of the best environmental reporters in the entire region. Anyway, settlement moves Portland Harbor's River Mile 11 closer to cleanup. This is from April of this year. After more than a year of legal wrangling, the city of Portland and five current and former property owners have agreed to move forward on one of Portland Harbor's most contaminated sites. We're talking about the foot of, I believe it's the western foot of the Fremont Bridge. Anyway, I'm just putting that out, people. I know that there are people who are probably listening to this who have no respect for the Oregonian. God knows, as a corporate entity, it's 163 years old, right? It's a big old thing. But some really amazing people have lost their jobs in the past week, and I really need people to like turn this issue over in your minds and look at it a different way. We have a couple callers. Let's go to the phone lines. We have Franny on the phone. What's going on? Hi, are you there?
I love the Willamette River. I want to go off topic just slightly, if that's okay, to ask about the Columbia Slough, which I think is a beautiful body of water, and I was recently kayaking on it. And I wondered, while I was kayaking, is this clean water, or what's going on here?
All right. Well, thanks for calling, and we'll run that one through. The Columbia Slough is an interesting... So the people in the room with me, they don't swim the Columbia Slough, and they're looking at each other and shrugging. They don't know the answer. The Columbia Slough traditionally has more issues, but I think that it's a tidal thing also, and I think that it has been cleaned up a lot since the 70s. I know that a whole group of people, especially African American people from Northeast Portland, actually did a whole lot of cleanup stuff on this back in the 80s, right? Richard Brown, the photographer, a bunch of people got together, and so there's a lot of better things happening. I will say, I live right near it, and my husband and my kids go down there and watch owls. There's an owl. Mm. There's baby owls down there. So there have definitely been some, breakthroughs there. But you know what, Franny? I'll try to get someone in to talk about the Columbia Slough, because, you know, some of the people doing work on that are some of the most fascinating people, like the Multnomah Water Service District, people who have weird organizations that you don't think that, you just don't relate to where they're coming from. But Columbia Slough, we're going to nail that one. I think that it has had some more cleanup happening, and yet I think that there are some issues there too. And so we have another caller, do we? No. All right. People who are out there, we would love to have more people calling to talk about, you know what, if you've got a Columbia Slough story, that's interesting too. Call us up and talk about your interaction with the Willamette. Have you been swimming in there in the past year? And what was your, you know, if you voted against fluoride, I'd love to hear your take on the Willamette River and why it was important to do that. And I'm challenging you to get into the river now, okay? 503-231-8187. Go ahead, Will.
And what are your dreams of the Willamette? Has anybody out there ever aspired for the Willamette to have better access to, maybe there's a big rock that's put in the Willamette where you can jump off that rock, or maybe there's a floating barge that has a diving board on it, or... You know, one of the fun experiences I had last year, when we're doing the World Float on July 5th, we're partnering with this group that's coming into town called World Domination Summit. There's going to be a conference coming to town, the World Domination Summit, mm-hmm. and 3,000 people are going to be flying in from all over the world to participate in this. But last year, I volunteered as a concierge, and an Australian gentleman came up, and he asked me how I would go about swimming across the Willamette. Now, at the time, I was just kind of really beginning my talks with the city about the idea of swimming, and they were really, I actually started believing some of the stuff they were telling me about how unsafe it was to be in the river. And when he said that to me, I was thinking, man, first of all, why would you like to know that? And the conference put on this unconventional challenge where they're giving points away for doing different things. You get 10 points for getting a picture with the mayor, get 10 points for going up to Mount Hood, get 10 points for swimming across the Willamette. So he said, okay, well, I'm doing this unconventional race. I was like, well, you know, I don't know. I guess I've never done it before. I suppose I would go off under the Hawthorne Bridge on the east side. And then I thought, you know, but you shouldn't do this on your own. Maybe this is my opportunity to swim across the Willamette for the first time. So
really? That's how you did that?
That was your first?
We're like, what?
I know. I thought somebody threw was down on me.
That was the first time I swam across. That was the first time I swam across. Before that, I was just kind of a passive waiter, you know, which
it was
is generally... Oh boy! Ooh, secrets revealed on KBOO. No, Marisa, you're not my first river crossing. No. So my friend Dave, who is flying in actually this Friday, we got there. He's wearing a pink swim cap and matching pink Speedos. And we swam across together. The Blues Festival was going on, so we swam past all the boats. We went up on the shore. We watched the music on the Jumbotron screen.
Because that's not against the law to jump in the river. I think a lot of us actually think that it is.
That's correct.
You can't walk on the grass. Don't jump in the river.
Yeah, and one of the big advocacy things that I'm really proud of last year was helping the city get comfortable with putting up the first sign in downtown Portland that says swim at your own risk. Because really, to me, that is just saying, yeah, it is okay. I mean, the rivers do have their risks, and you can't take it lightly. I would never advocate going to the river on your own.
Right.
But that was a great experience.
We have a couple callers. Let's go to those phone lines. We have Eddie on the phone. Eddie, what are you thinking about this morning?
Hey, yeah, I've been in the river. I went swimming down in the slough out at Kelly Point Peak, Kelly Point Park. My only question about it is, I mean, my only concern, all my friends tell me I'm crazy, you know, to jump in the river. They claim it's going to start burning any minute now. but my only concern is mostly about all the agricultural activity upstream.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Just like, I mean, hundreds of miles of, you know,
of chemicals,
100% organic, like, farming going on.
Right. So you also have hundreds of miles of water diluting that before it gets to you. Don't forget that.
Right.
So how dilute is it?
Eddie, thanks for calling. And actually, Marisa has done that research. So thanks for calling, and we'll roll it over to her.
I haven't looked at that extensively because the people I talked to, we discussed the dilution factor. And so by the time it gets here, again, you don't want to drink it, but it's not like you're taking a bottle of agricultural chemicals and dumping it all over your body.
Well, I wouldn't recommend drinking water out of the Deschutes either. I mean, there's just the river has living organisms in it.
Right,
it's just
exactly.
It's just a bad practice. But on the other hand, I mean, when you swim, I've gotten water in my mouth before. And
so do I.
You know, I mean, so it will happen. But, you know, ultimately, I mean, it's funny, again, that thing about how the river's going to burn, how it's kind of taken on a personality
before,
of its own.
Oh, and there are bodies in it. And
for me, what I've come to believe is that the reason why people make jokes about the Willamette is because people feel so uncomfortable about it. It's easier to kind of dismiss it and make a mm-hmm. joke about it than to actually kind of put your head around. Okay, so people screwed it up. Do people have the power to unscrew it up? That's the first question. And then from there, when people have opinions, anybody out there who has an opinion that the Willamette is unsafe for swimming, I just challenge you to ask, how did you develop that opinion? Is it because a neighbor told you or a friend told you while you were drinking? Or have you taken any time to do some cursory research? On the homepage of the Big Float website, we have letters from Department of Environmental Quality, Bureau of Environmental Services, and Office of Healthy Working River, all talking about the water quality of the Willamette. It's perfectly safe. Oregon Health Authority has a letter out there. We're going to work on getting on the website. All agree, Willamette Riverkeeper, the Riverkeeper organizations, all agree the Willamette is perfectly safe for swimming. So either it's a complete government conspiracy to trick people to swim in dirty water, or it might actually be safe.
We and, have another caller. Oh, let's rip out the second caller. We have John on the phone. John, what are you thinking?
Hey, Will. Nice radio voice.
Oh, hey, that's a neighbor, John Barron, maybe. I recognize that voice.
See my last name.
Sorry.
Hey, as you open up the river, you know, one thing for me, I'm a fisherman, so, and one of the things I don't have in the Willamette River is good access for somebody trying to call in.
All right,
and,
John.
So as maybe these spots open up, do you foresee a conflict with fishermen and more swimmers?
Thanks for calling, John.
That's a good question. For me, the way I view shared use of the Willamette is that this is the perfect opportunity. The hardest thing is that the city is so underfunded that there's not really a lot of space right now to think about planning for the future of swimming, and that's where the more people who get into the water, the more they can justify putting resources to that. But generally, I sort of feel like, you know, you have parks, you have dog sections of the parks. Some parks have frisbee areas and Forest Park or any trails. Sometimes you have trails for people only. Sometimes it's people and bikes. Sometimes it's horses only. Sometimes it's bikes and horses, whatever.
I think we could work it out. I think we have the technology to work it out.
They'll be shared. There'll be opportunities to have shared. There's a lot of shoreline on the Willamette that's totally underutilized right now. So go on out and fish.
I also wanted to come out and say, Will mentioned the World Domination Summit. That looks like a ton of fun. It's also the same weekend as the World Float, July 5th through 7th. And that we're not here to shill the World Domination Summit, well, but it looks awesome.
And it's sold out.
Oh, so you can't shill it even if you want to.
You can't even shill it. So 3,000, they've rented the Arlene Schnitzer Concert Hall to hold the event. They're going to be, they have these crazy venues. I guess it's not a secret anymore, hopefully. They're going to be having an opening party at the Oregon Zoo. They rented the zoo. They are going to be having a closing party at Pioneer Courthouse Square, which is just for the attendees. But in terms of an economic boost for the city, like, these are all young people flying in from all over the world who are going to be staying in hotels, eating at restaurants. I mean, the economic impact of World Domination Summit coming to town, I don't know, what does each person spend? Like $2,000 while they're here, probably, times 3,000. That's like at least $6 million.
Like-minded people who are interested in pursuing big goals while changing the world. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Anyway, we just brought that up. So maybe you'll meet some world domination people.
During the world float. That's right. And I was even saying, too, that what an opportunity. If you want to participate in the world float, I really hope you get on it quick, because it's going to be really sad if you're left at the dock as this awesome inner tube chain is going on. But what a great opportunity if you're a single person to meet a new friend, right?
It is actually incredible. And I'm not going to babble too much about what an incredible time I had at the big float, but I will say it was a cloudy day. I got up and went, oh my God, we're going to jump in the river. And there's not even any sun. Dang it. But when we went down there, it was so nice and it didn't matter. We have one more caller. Let's try to make this fast. Nancy, what you got?
Hi. Okay. I've never done this before. It's kind of nervous. But I went down the Columbia Slough last year to stop at every single bridge just to see what the slough looked like, because I wanted to go fishing for pike minnow and see if any fish were there. I've never seen such a horrible slough not everywhere. I can tell you about each stop.
You know what, Nancy? We don't have time to hear each stop. We've got like 1 minute left. So what I hear you saying is that you were disappointed at the condition of the Columbia Slough.
It was bubbling up from the bottom. I don't know what that is.
That would be a pipe. That would be a pipe. Thanks a lot for calling, Nancy. We are literally, we've got 2 minutes left in the show. Hey, people, like, when we take callers, we love it when you call early in the hour. And thank you so much for calling early in the hour. The Columbia Slough is like 40 miles. It's like 40 miles of water paths that people take. So that's definitely a place where you have, it's like a tidal thing. So tides come in, tides go out. So it's definitely going to be different in different places. But we have like 1 minute left. Let's go around the studio too, talking about the Willamette River, talking about the World Float Friday, July 5th, and Big Float 3 on July 28th. The Portland Bridge Swim is July 21st.
Yes.
So let's go to Marissa. Marissa, why should people get in the river? We're putting this on a bumper stickers on our way out.
Okay. You can impress your friends by running a marathon. You can impress your friends by, I don't know, wrestling alligators. But it's way easier to impress your friends by getting in the river.
All right.
Bam.
Go ahead.
Hey, if all I can say is I love rivers, and I know that this river is going to transform downtown Portland. Right now, you can make a difference just by getting in and taking a dip.
All right. And that's it for our show. Thanks to our guests, Will Levinson and Marissa Frieder. More on the World Float at humanaccessproject.com. Go down to the Columbia Slough. You check it out on your own. Special thanks to engineer Steve Nasser and Sky the Studio Dog. This show will be podcast on KBOO.FM by the end of today. Grab that link and share it with your friends and family. I'm Lisa Loving. Follow me on Twitter for more news and information about the topics we discuss on this show. Theme music by the March 4th Marching Band. Thanks for listening. And stay tuned. I'm going to be back with Peter Zuckerman of Oregon United for Marriage.
You are listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM, 91.9 FM Hood River in the Gorge, 104.3 FM Philomath and Corvallis. The time is 9 o'clock straight up. Coming up next, we get reactions to this week's historic Supreme Court decisions. Lisa Loving will continue to speak with Peter Zuckerman of Oregon United for Marriage and Laughlin McDonald, director of the ACLU Voting Rights Project. At 10 o'clock, it's Chris Andre. At 10:15, Flashpoints. A North American gets a tiny taste of what it's like to cross the new militarized border. And at 11 on the Recovery Zone, host Stephanie Potter speaks with Daniel Schmitz, author of What a Plant Knows, A Field Guide to the Senses.
Good in the Hood returns to celebrate its 20th year, June 20th through the 30th. Good in the Hood is a multicultural music and food festival featuring a parade, information village, kids space arts and crafts, and an ethnic marketplace. Saturday, June 29th, Good in the Hood will be at Lillis Albina Park in North Portland with music, and KBOO will broadcast live from the park from 2 to 7 p.m. More information about this KBOO-sponsored event may be found at KBOO.fm on the right-hand side of the homepage under Community Events.
Did you know that KBOO's daily evening newscast is produced by a team of volunteers right here in our Portland studios? If you've got some extra time,